And now I am delighted to be joined. Well, maybe I shouldn't say delighted, because we shouldn't really need to be speaking about this subject. It's, you know, it's just not on. We have Emma Reedy, a manager of Amos, the women's shelter in Coolock. And in light of what's been happening with the bravery of Jacqueline Connolly and Mary Call in speaking out about the murder of their daughter, Clodagh, to the killing of Cathy Ward, the third woman this year to be killed in her home, it is clear that the government's not dealing with the scale of the problem of violence against women and is not learning lessons to make life safer for women and children. So, Emma, thanks for joining me to this morning. So, I know the centre there, it was set up in 1997, and I know it well. I live around the area, so I'm passing it quite often. And I just feel, with the scale of the problem, I see it as quite small. How many families and how many mothers and children can you have in the centre at any one time?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the scale of the problem. The scale of the problem is significant, and we are one of three services now in Dublin that provide crisis refuge accommodation to women and children fleeing an abusive situation in their home. Our accommodation is the biggest in Dublin, providing 10 families at any one time accommodation. Mm. And, you know, we have, as you said, we're serving the local population and the greater Dublin area for, you know, many years now. We're 31 years now mm-hmm. doing what we're doing. We've been in Coolock since 1997, before that in Ballymun. But in order to take into consideration that our refuge accommodation can't or doesn't cater for everyone that needs refuge, mm. we are unable to accommodate up to 400 families every year. So we've had to really, really focus on how we develop our community supports to women and children. And as a result of which, we, you know, have, you know, developed outreach services in North County Dublin, North Dublin and North Inner City.
And what would they entail, those outreach services?
Well, they're varied insofar as, you know, we take the community provision to look at two strands, which is after women and children access refuge and they get through, or, you know, access a type of immediate crisis intervention in terms of what they've had to endure, the trauma that's involved, we think about the next stage, having and leaving refuge, about how, with accommodation, you know, behind them, possibly a return back home, how do, in a community setting, do we put supports around them? You know, they go from a 24-hour, very intensive environment where there is support day and night to back into the community, and as a result of which needing access to, you know, workers that will, you know, meet with them where they need it, where they can access groups, where they can access various therapies. And that's really important. The other side of that is for those women and children that don't firstly want refuge, don't feel that they should or, you know, have to leave their home, that we have a community provision that takes that into consideration. And it is for us about thinking of, as you mentioned at the very beginning, where we think about the third woman now in this year, in 2019, to lose her life after Cathy, Yasmin and Elizabeth. It is about, from a community prevention point of view, thinking about how we get to women and children at the earliest stage possible in their experience of domestic abuse. We want to also obviously, you know, avoid women, you know, coming to a point where they have to, for their safety, leave their homes with their children. So it is about thinking about how we get in there as soon as possible to support her where possible to remain in her home with her children. It's her home, her community that she's surrounded in, and it's only right where possible that we can make and bring the services to her.
Yes, but it's it must be terrifying for them, because it's like the enemy within, you know, their home is supposed to be their sanctuary, but yet they're living with this abuse. And it's not just physical abuse, it can, a lot of cases can be emotional abuse too, you know, and that can be even more, you know, soul destroying and tip them, you know, knock them and knock them and knock them. And the thing is, I feel a lot of women, they feel shame in telling their mothers, their fathers, their friends, their sisters, brothers. You know, they shouldn't feel the shame. Mm-hmm. It should be the shame on the person who's doing it. And that's why there's probably an awful lot more that just aren't coming forward. And this is why we have people being murdered in their homes. You know, they're not coming out to your services. But when they go to you, how long can they stay with you?
When they come to us, the refuge accommodation is crisis orientated, and in order to make sure that we can provide accommodation to as many families as possible, we generally work from a timeline of 8 to 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. And in that amount of time, we're highly motivated to ensure that where a woman wants to go home, that she has the correct legal protection where she wants that to enable her to go home. If she needs supported housing, that we can get that underway. Like that, if she's planning on accessing independent accommodation, that we can work in a very concentrated manner to make sure that we can facilitate that happening. Mm-hmm. There is, unfortunately, a large percentage of the women and children that we support that, by virtue of accessing our service, are referred into homeless accommodation, where they might be going into family hubs, B&Bs or hotels, and I think that's where we'd really like to focus on, where there are very obvious gaps in where there's a shortfall in the provision for families.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, homeless figures discount the experiences of women and children experiencing domestic abuse, and it's very important for us that we think about the development of specialist units where women and children that begin their journey in a specialist environment can remain in that type of environment until they're fully healed and recovered from what they've gone through. And as you maybe touched on at the beginning of your question, if we think about what happens in the home and what women and children are faced with on a day-to-day, we know that domestic abuse, you know, it's a pattern of behaviours that women and children experience within the home. And if we were all much more open about, you know, creating a dialogue amongst friends or families in our communities, you know, looking at how we can encourage people to start talking about their experiences, it might enable more people to, you know, speak out about what's happening in the home. Mm-hmm. I am, however, conscious that where we think about, you know, how patterns begin or what emerges from the home where it relates to maybe an unhealthy relationship in its very beginning stages, that's often the intention of the perpetrator, is to gradually, you know, develop things in the relationship, to have maybe the woman query or question herself, or, you know, what it is that she might be doing wrong to, you know, to be at the receiving end of this behaviour. And all the emphasis is usually placed by the perpetrator on the woman, you know, and that if you only did this, or if you changed, it would allow me to be different, it wouldn't bring about these feelings in me.
Yeah.
So it often starts, you know, patterns start in small ways where maybe women become isolated from family and friends because maybe emphasis is on, you know, the fact that, you know, if your family weren't this way, if they didn't like me, maybe I wouldn't feel so angry, you know, all the time. So this is how patterns, you know, begin.
And so they're trying to put the blame on the person.
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, it very much puts accountability back on the woman herself, and she internalizes this. She often goes through stages in her own right where she tries to adapt or change her behavior to kind of experience a different response from the perpetrator in that case. And that's often the cycle women find themselves in, where they're looking at themselves. Often their self-esteem takes on, is very eroded, and they feel very low in themselves. And And again, they're isolated from maybe family and friends, and that again being the tactic of the person involved.
Yes.
So it's important that we think about how cycles begin or emerge, and if we can be part of tackling and responding at the earliest stage, we run a better chance in helping or assisting families remain in their homes and in their communities. And that's by going into schools, that's by going into women's groups, that's by having women's groups in local areas where women can really kind of look at, you know, what constitutes or what does a healthy relationship look like, and, you know, examine that against maybe what their own experience of a relationship looks like. And the same for young people in secondary schools, to have a space in schools where they can think about, you know, based on what they may have seen or may not have seen, what does a healthy or an unhealthy relationship look like, and begin that discussion as early as possible.
But just feeling that with the homeless crisis, and as you say, they may go into hubs or they may go into bed and breakfast or whatever, and with so few of these available and whatever, a lot of the women are going back to the home, and as you say, you're trying to help them cope. But can charges not be brought against the perpetrators, and so the mum and the kids can go back into a safe environment and the perpetrator be taken out of that environment? Does that never happen?
Well, we have the domestic violence legislation in place, and a lot of women and children, because the legislation covers children also, that experience abuse, they have the right to access through a family law court's protection. But that's, you know, not necessarily criminalised behaviour that a perpetrator is subject or sanctioned to when a woman goes for protection on an order. It enables her to, having experienced abuse of any kind, whether it's psychological, logical, financial, physical or sexual, to get that protection and then to use that thereafter. So the crime, if you like, has already happened. So she gets the protection based on an experience and an abusive experience at that. And often, more than not, this allows or facilitates women to maybe having access refuge to return home. But again, they're somewhat aware that even if they are there to enforce that protection by calling the guards, that the response that the guards might give is subject to their understanding of the legislation and how they feel they can enforce it. So it is important that, I think, where we're placing emphasis on women going to court and that we're allowing for them better access through the courts, that we also think about how Gardaí can further be resourced in their understanding and their exposure to the new legislation as well. We had an important development in the legislation last year in relation to coercive control, and that was really quite milestone for us in that we've been campaigning for many years that, again, women and children and their experience in the home of abuse, they go through so much psychological abuse that often it's a case that the system, being as reactive as it is, they're waiting for a point at time where something physically happens that justifies at that point a woman or and a child being able to reach out and get, you know, legal sanction. And what we really want is an earlier response where it allows for that if a woman is being put down and there's a pattern identified in a perpetrator's behaviour, that a woman can bring that pattern to the attention of the courts and that she can get the protection that she needs to safeguard herself and her children. And if we think about what psychological abuse is, it's the fear or the threat that harm is going to come to you and your children. So it's really important that we have on the other end of that, where the courts are now granting protection for women and children, that Gardaí have the ability to, when they're called, enforce that order by arresting the perpetrator and then bringing them before criminal courts.
Right, well, that's a lot better than it used to be, that the guards would arrive and kind of, oh, it's domestic abuse, you know, it's within the home, we can do nothing. You know, wasn't that the case? Maybe it was many years ago. Has it changed a lot since then?
I think we're very conscious as a service in our own right that much of what we have to do can't be isolated. We recognise that as an agency in our own right, we have to work with other agencies, and we would do a lot of training in with all the local Garda stations, and that's been really important for us anyway. Working together with Gardaí, yes. Acknowledging where they're incredibly under-resourced and where they lack a lot of training and development in their own right, where we can bring them along in that. So it's been really critical and crucial for us to get into the Garda stations, to get to guards, to get them through or get them thinking about, well, what is it like, you know, in a home living in domestic abuse, and what would and does it take for a child or a woman to call Gardaí, and what are they looking from Gardaí by way of a response? And mm-hmm. that's been very positive for us. But I would, you know, throw caution that for a lot of women that seek Garda response, the response can be very unpredictable. And I think our hope would be that by bringing in a national training program for Gardaí and resourcing Gardaí to, you know, to under the powers of the domestic violence legislation, to offer a specialist support and a liaison support to women and children. And that's really important that we see that happen, because it is a case often that this is life and death. Yes. And it's a case that we want to avoid women and children coming to serious harm in the home.
Mm. Now, statistics wise, mm-hmm. How many thousands of you know, abuse have you heard, are the statistics out there for, you know, Dublin even itself?
Well, we'd identify that there's approximately 1 in 3 women that experience domestic abuse. Wow. So it's quite pervasive. That's based on also cross analysis in other European countries. So we know we're on trend, but that does take into consideration that there's a huge percentage of women that don't report domestic abuse.
Yes, yes.
And males for that matter too. And it's important that for the 1 in 3 that we estimate that there's a huge amount that don't come forward. We do estimate that approximately 15% of all women will experience a type of abuse in their lifetime, mm-hmm. That they're willing to share, and that's again through research we've been able to kind of get that data. But we would identify through our work and our commitment to ratifying the Istanbul Convention that we have an obligation to provide 1 in every 50,000 women refuge places in the country. So we do know that we're not there in terms yeah. of providing the correct number of beds or accommodations to women and children that need to leave their home. And my hope would be that we get that
yes.
in terms of ratifying the Istanbul Convention, that we meet those basic standards. Mm.
When I was looking up on the subject, I noticed that there was just 3 mm-hmm. refuge centres within Dublin itself, mm. you know, and it just seems, you know, and especially when you see Coolock, the hub is so small, and these other centres are as small. You kind of think, are the government just burying their head in the sand yet again on this, and they're not giving the funding that's required? Do they not see it? Or is it a case that because it's very difficult to get the statistics because people are not coming forward, mm. but you're turning away 300 to 400, you say? Mm. So why is the funding not there? Why are they not backing this up and doing something about it?
I think it's a very difficult one for us. We would identify that we're very under-resourced, and if, you know, we take Dublin into consideration, as you rightly said, there is 3 refuge services providing accommodation to women and children. We've unfortunately lost a service in South Dublin, and that's been closed for now 18 months. And it's left and carried a big implication on what services have had to, in the absence of that service, mm. had to take on over the last 18
and
months.
And did that close because of lack of funding? Or
No, it closed due to issues with the building itself, right. Which brings about, you know, again, the onus on funders and government departments to really, you know, prioritise a level of need and focus, you know, to standards that exist or, you know, are there to meet women and children at one of their most vulnerable points. We would identify that Dublin being, you know, in terms of serving so much of the population, is under-resourced, and a need for us, therefore, is to increase the beds quite substantially that we can offer women and children. And that's something that we are trying to campaign on a regional and a national level. Mm. And we'd hope that, you know, very soon we'd be able to see more beds open in Dublin. But I would, you know, again, throw caution that we have to, by virtue of being a Dublin refuge, we have to accommodate women all over the country. Our refuge carries a national, you know, a national geographic.
So you're not just dealing with people from the Coolock area.
No.
They're coming from around the
country. And it's quite important that we recognise that the national remit in what women and children need by way of mm-hmm. a refuge service. Where we think about some smaller counties, women have to leave counties in order to get safety. So they have to look outside their county of origin or residence to come further afield. And again, we do have a majority of the clients that we support, about 70% come from Dublin. You know, another 20-25% don't. So it's important to consider that a refuge needs to be, you know, able to house women confidentially so that their needs can be met. And if they have to, they can't return to a county where they've left, and we have to be prepared to put whatever resources in place to accommodate for that. Mm. But there are some counties in the Republic that don't have refuge accommodation, and they're, as a result, you know, not resourcing women and children adequately on top of that. Mm.
But in some cases, I know it's dreadful that they have to leave their county or whatever, but in cases where the partner will come and start terrorising them and terrorising yourselves. Do you get a lot of that, where they come banging on the doors, I'm sure, trying to get their wife and children out?
Safety is of the utmost importance to us, in that we aim to create for women and children a safe home, a home that hasn't represented safety for them. So security is a very big thing for us, but we do come across and have encountered trespass, and what happens usually in that circumstance is that we liaise locally with Gardaí. We are very well, again, security linked, and we get an armed response where we need it as well. Mm-hmm. But there are those perpetrators that will travel the length and breadth of the county and the country to ensure that they find their spouses. So it's very important to us that we can, you know, deliver on what we promise a family, which is ultimately safety from an experience that, you know, wasn't safe for them, and that we can utilise the Gardaí and the courts where needed in that as well. And we do.
And the people are that you have working within the centre itself, with the refuge, do you have psychologists, social workers, different people, you know, that the person would need to build their mind up, to build themselves up again? So what sort of staff do you have?
Well, we don't consciously offer counselling support when a woman is in resident with us, and that's because often the trauma can be so acute for women and children that we don't often encourage or even offer a therapeutic response until they access our community provision. So the community supports would enable a woman to, you know, begin exploring therapeutically what it is she needs to do, you know, in terms of her own self-exploration or self-examination. Mm-hmm. That can be a very raw experience to go through when you're thinking about just leaving a home, leaving a community, and then really starting from scratch. So we're conscious that with the type of provision that we provide in refuge, it's very much geared around enabling, empowering, and our staff would have a wide range of staff and qualifications behind them. But we really has, by way of minimum standards, we have social science, social policy, and psychology, or the human sciences, as a prerequisite. And then after that, it's about building on what it is they might need after they've moved from refuge. But for children, we'd also have some therapies like play therapy and art therapy, which are very important, that they can access their own you know, therapeutic support, and that again would be offered to children and youth when they're, you know, living out of refuge and living in the community. Very much our social care staff who work and look after children and youth will be there to offer one-to-one practical and emotional support. We'd have sibling and group and family work. And then like that, all women would be allocated a key worker that would map out their care plans and work through achieving with them certain goals. But it's emotional and practical, and a lot of the emotional work would stem or focus on psychoeducational pieces, which would be very much about building women up. Because as you said in the earlier part of the interview, that shame can be a very intertwined kind of concept, you know, and a feeling that a lot of women carry with them right through their journey. So it's really for us about using a very empathetic position and through an empowerment approach, thinking about with them, you know, what it is that they have had to survive, and to promote an encouraging focus on themselves as women, themselves as parents, mothers, and that begins at the stage in which they access the refuge.
Yes, and that really they are strong to have been able to put up with all of that abuse and try to keep their children safe throughout it as well. Yes. So you have, I don't know whether it's good or bad news, you've good news that you're going to get a larger centre at some stage, or you're going to be able to build on, but to me it's bad news because we shouldn't need it. That's the way I feel. But tell me about the plans that are afoot.
Well, maybe people in the Coolock area might be familiar with the site beside or opposite Crum Castle. We're hoping to develop that site for the purpose of some supported housing. And it's very important for us again that we don't have women and children leaving our centre to access homeless accommodation, that we can stay with them and they can stay with us to access a therapeutic support and a specialist support, because again, homeless accommodation doesn't carry on any sort of therapy, if you like, when a woman is coming through what she's coming through. So we're hoping to develop that, and we're working with Dublin City Council in relation to that at the moment. We have offices for our community work in Artane, and we're in the process of opening up another office for all our community work in Balbriggan. So again, that's a really important development for us, insofar as, you know, we have hundreds of women that we accommodate through our refuge accommodation, but we also have anywhere from 400 to 500 women that we support through our community work. And, you know, the more we can offer women again within the community, the more emphasis that means it places on the Gardaí to remove perpetrators from the home, to facilitate women and children remaining in their home, and to bring a level of support to them where we can. So it's a really important, I can't stress that philosophy enough, that women have had to suffer enough in what they've had to go through. And the thinking that we've often had over the years is that despite that experience, that we have to place an emphasis on what they need to do to get safety, which is access refuge. And that has a place, and it's more than appropriate for, you know, under some circumstances. But it is really important that we put more emphasis on bringing services to women and children, and putting the accountability back with the perpetrator. So it's removing the perpetrator where at all possible from the home.
Exactly, as I was saying, because it's traumatic enough that they've to come to you, and then to think after that, trying to build themselves up and then go into a homeless shelter or a hub or a bed and breakfast and have their children there. Then after the weeks, you know, the bruises might go, the emotional pain might go, they might start feeling, you know, and go back, and it's just starting again. So they do need that support to try to keep them on the right footing and get the perpetrator taken out of the home so they can be back in their own home. They've done nothing wrong. Exactly. They should be back in their own home, the safety of their home, their community and their families around them, and the perpetrators should be taken out. But as you did say earlier, it's not just women. There are men that are abused in the home as well, and I think there's amen for them. So with the plans, when do they think that all of this building, it's in the old coal yard, I believe, over
it's beside opposite. That, it's where the old manor house is, the Woodville house, right. It's referred to. There's other housing being developed by DCC beside or adjacent to the land that we're hoping to develop. But again, like it's important to us that we can be prioritised for our own accommodation mm-hmm. by DCC.
Yeah.
For all too long, we'd identify that homeless services have made domestic abuse or domestic violence a very marginalised issue, mm-hmm. An issue that doesn't affect, by and large, the majority of the population. And it's really something that we want to get people thinking about, that this is not a marginalised issue. This is not an issue that affects the minority of the population, and that we need an infrastructure that takes into consideration how we provide that specialist care mm-hmm. without enforcing on people access into mainstream homeless services. So it's really important that DCC and the relevant departments get behind domestic violence services, including EVNIS, to support and enable us to do that.
Yes. Well, when you said at the beginning, 1 in 3, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a third of the female population.
Yeah.
And then, as we've said, there are men as well being abused in their homes. It's just such a huge amount mm-hmm. of people. And then that's only the ones that you can actually mm-hmm. Say. There's others that are silent and
yeah.
Putting up with it for years and years, mental abuse as well. Mm-hmm. So really, I hope everything goes well for this new place that you're trying to set up. But where do you get your funding from? Is it all from the government, or how do you fund the place?
The majority is government funding. We are, I suppose, funded, you know, our core funding comes from TUSLA, Child and Family Agency. That's a relatively new agency, mm-hmm. Developed in 2014. We were formerly HSC funded, but again, domestic violence services and sexual violence services moved over and are now being taken care of by the family agency. So about 90% of our funding would come from TUSLA, some from CUSC, which is Department of Justice, and then other is through some fundraising efforts.
Right. And what fundraising efforts would they be?
Well, a lot of our fundraising would focus on the services that we actually deliver to women and children. So around Christmas time, summer time, two points during the year, we really do concentrate efforts and put out appeals on social media. And again, you know, we're very thankful that we've been able to do that, because our play therapy, for example, would be through fundraise means.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the support groups that we've been able to introduce in 2018 for children and for women came from our fundraising. So we had our Freedom Programme and our Freedom Programme for Children that established in 2018, and that's really first of its kind for children, because again, I would emphasise that children can be sometimes the forgotten, you know, mm-hmm. few in all of this, and it's not really that they're even few by virtue of what's, and you know, again, the pervasiveness of what happens within the home and how many experience domestic abuse. But really, we're focusing a lot of our efforts on, we have a lot of services for women, but we really want to develop specialist services for children. So
yes.
The play therapy, the art therapy, the groups for children, and a lot of our parenting groups for women and children, to look at how, you know, as women, how they manage as parents what they've gone through with the child in mind, are all really important developments that we hope to focus on. And it's through fundraising efforts that we can really continue that.
Yes, because for a young child developing to see this happening, you know, to hear, you know, what's been said, and you know, they grow up in fear themselves, but they grow up, and it's children are learning
mm-hmm.
from what, so it would be learned behaviour then.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to try and stop that and nip it in the bud and try to help them emotionally, because they're watching this or maybe hearing these arguments or these things, you know, and the put downs. It's just horrific when you think about the poor children, in the equation.
And it's a very individual experience I think children have. You know, whether it's a direct or an indirect exposure to the abuse within the home, it's still an experience, and it's an experience that they need an individual support around. So we'd have, for every family member that accesses refuge, we'd create individual care plans for every member of that family. So it's not just looking at mum and her three children, it's taking each child into consideration in relation to their individual experience.
Exactly, yes,
and that's really quite key, because these are our future generations, men and women. And we acknowledge that we're now 31 years, as I said at the beginning of the interview, in operation. We've unfortunately seen, by being as long as we are, coming through now are the next generation, now as mothers, as children in refuge coming through now. So I think we have to acknowledge the obligation we have to really, you know, fix the problem and to allocate the correct resourcing into, you know, helping and assisting with, you know, children, and particularly girls and boys, in relation to what their unique needs are in terms of recovering from early experiences and, as you said, learned behaviours.
Yes, yes, definitely. Well, I could talk to you all day, my goodness, and I know you've to get off back to another meeting. But thank you so much for coming
in.
I'm sure we'll try to go back to it again, maybe when your new place is up and running, or before, and you can tell us, and hopefully you'll have some good news stories for
us.
So thank you, Emma, for coming in. Now I would like to ask you, how can people get in touch with you?
Thank you. Crucially, if there's anything in today's interview that struck a chord, if you feel that, you know, no matter what is happening in the home, that you have questions in relation to how you might feel in the context of that home experience, it doesn't have to just be an intimate relationship, it can be anything within the family. But if there's questions you're asking yourself in terms of how safe you feel, is this normal, is this right, I'd encourage you to ring our 24-hour helpline. It's 01-867-0701. In confidence, we can talk to you. In confidence, we can explore your options, and then we can take it, you know, stage by stage, step by step. Alternatively, Women's Aid operate a national helpline, and that number is 1-800-341-900. That's free phone. So again, if there is something that you want to talk about, feel free to contact one of those helplines. And Women's Aid, like that, are very good at signposting people into their local areas where supports may exist. So again, while they might be national in how they operate, they will know local areas and supports that exist in those areas. So please feel free to contact those numbers and reach out. Courage is key.
Definitely, yes. Thank you, Emma. Thanks so much.